Welcome to this week's edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. Wilmington City Council is seeing a change in its makeup, but this one is a bit unusual. The change isn't because of a resignation or election. It's the result of a change in party affiliation. Councilman James Spadola recently announced he is switching from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party. Spadola was the lone Republican on council, serving in an at-large seat reserved for the minority party. Now there are officially no GOP voices on Wilmington City Council. Earlier this week, I sat down with Spadola to discuss his decision and Wilmington City politics. So can you walk us through your decision? What prompted the switch and why now?
Sure. So it's one of those things that happens very gradually and then suddenly. It's at some point, it's like, you know, it's, even though there's a lot of methodical thought that I put into it, at the end of the day, it's, you're ripping a Band-Aid off. Just to go back in time, I think I always could have been a moderate Democrat. I happened to register as Republican a while back. But I think it probably started right in 2015, 2016, my deep aversion to Donald Trump and some of the policies, and somehow Trump 2.0 being next level bad compared to even Trump 1.0. And in addition to that, though, I think Trump 1.0, there was maybe the illusion that there was room in the party for some divergent thought and not just bending the knee. But I think what's disappointed me the most about Trump 2.0, not just in terms of tariffs or ICE or federalizing the National Guard, trying to get people fired in companies, all the big government things that I thought a party that wanted limited government would be against. But what we see in the party now, unfortunately, at the national level, I should say, is that there's no room for opposing ideas. A party, if you think about a party in the literal sense, it's 10, 15 people talking, having some conversation. Right now, the party is about one man. And it's a man that I've never liked, never voted for, never supported, and never could. So take all that into account. And then I asked myself, why would I stay Republican? And that was just a really hard question for me to answer. And other than the political convenience of my seat, and I would say, you know, granted 2020 is years away, a glide path to reelection if I ran again for this seat in 2028, that's the only reason that made sense to me, but that's not true to who I am. So I was like, I've always, you know, I've had a good relationship with a lot of our Democratic elected officials and leadership and bounced this idea around with them. And, you know, I've been met with an overwhelming reception since I started talking about it with them seriously and since. So, yeah, I really thank all the Wilmington Democrats that have reached out. I never doubted I made the right decision, and the warmth I've felt since, you know, it's really been something.
Was there ever a consideration of just being an independent?
Yeah. So I think it's more like, why be lost in the wilderness as an independent, especially coming up with some local races in 2026. I want to be able to vote in the primaries. I want to help out some of the candidates that I think are worthy of helping. And as an independent, I just wouldn't be able to do that.
You mentioned that a lot of this has to do with the national situation and President Trump. Do you feel there's no room for moderate voices in Delaware's GOP? I'm thinking back to people like the last non-incumbent Republican to win statewide, former state treasurer Ken Simpler, or the late Mike Castle, who was a very popular moderate Republican governor, congressman in the state. Is there no room for those type of Republicans here in Delaware anymore?
Yeah, it's a good question. Unfortunately, I think the national mood, the national GOP dictates how I view the party. So yeah, so I this is about the party at the national level to me. You know, the people you just mentioned, well-respected, good people, of course, RIP Mike Castle. He was a big supporter of mine. Mm-hmm. But I think he would even acknowledge it's a totally different party at the national level from 2016, 2020, and even today. So just, you know, the changes over the past few years, let alone since he exited Congress in 2010. Unfortunately, the national, you know, MAGA has the national GOP in a chokehold. That's what it is.
I want to go back to a conversation you and I had in 2018. I interviewed you when you were doing your Elected Officials of America podcast, where you were looking to kind of humanize politicians and talk about underdog stories. And in that conversation, you talked about your run for state senate in 2016. And that was in a heavily Democratic district. But you said in talking to even staunch Democratic voters during that campaign, they wanted some balance from a viable Republican Party. Do you feel like that's not the case anymore? Maybe even on either side, that people have kind of created a you're with us or against us mentality, that they'd rather gerrymander districts into safe seats than actually compete, like you were talking about back in 2018, to have a real conversation and debate?
Yeah, and I think a lot of this is at lays at the feet of our president. I don't think that we've had a more partisan president in our times. So I think he's really helped put everybody in their corners, and it's team blue or team red. And there's very little room for nuance, very little room for conversation. And I think I think about the mood in 2016 and 2018. I think today is, even though I think it was stark back then, being a non-MAGA Republican, it's even way worse now.
So your move officially leaves city council without a Republican voice, and you alluded to this a little bit earlier. And I understand there's no legal issue with that, even though you hold an at-large seat that was reserved for the minority party. How much did that work into your thought process? Was there a lot of concern as you weighed your decision, even just the optics of what you were doing and what the result would be?
No, voters elect people, not parties. And if you look at my outperformance on the ballot relative to other statewide Republicans, it's clear that they were electing me, despite being a Republican, I should say. So, no, and, in terms of, voters were electing me, not the party.
So you also mentioned about, looking into the future and when you would be up for reelection. It sounds like you would consider running as a Democrat and trying to stay on city council in that way? Or do you have thoughts of other offices maybe that you might want to move on to? You have obviously run for state senate. You ran for state auditor at one point. Are those kind of things that are also kind of in the mix in your mind as you look at your new horizon?
I would say anything I would do in 2028 would be city focused. I was, young and full of vigor in 2016, 2018, running crazy statewide races. I said in 2018, the only other statewide race I might run would be a reelection campaign. So my hat's off to anybody running statewide, but I don't think you'll catch me on a statewide ballot. Just, 2028 is 3 years away. It is, we've got two young kids at home. It's who knows what the landscape will look like. It's not something that's really on my mind.
When you say city oriented, would mayor ever be a consideration for you?
Anything is on the table and nothing is on the table at the same time. We're not even 1 year into a first term mayor working on his term. So it's not something, he's still young enough relatively speaking. And, he's somebody I like and support at this point. So, it's not an overriding thought in my mind.
Well, so I do want to move on to talk a little bit about city politics while we have you. And since we're talking about Mayor Carney, I'm curious how you feel about the state of council's relationship with the new mayor and how it compares to former Mayor Mike Przycki. You said you support Mayor Carney. Yeah, how do you feel the council's relationship is with this mayor just about a year into his first term?
I think the council relationship with this mayor is better than it was in the past. I think a lot of that has to do with Mayor Carney's staff. I think they're, don't get me wrong, I just liked and respected Mayor Przycki's staff as well, but I think Mayor Carney's staff might be, because they're new to city government as well, so they're just open to newer ideas and different ways of doing things. So I think that's been helpful, not just with my relationship with them, but really everybody who's taking a progressive approach to how you run a municipal government in terms of trying new things, tinkering with new things. So I think that's been helpful. I wouldn't say there's been any standoffs yet between council and Mayor Carney. I think, there's been no vetoes or anything. I believe he was going to veto the rent control bill if that passed council, but that was defeated. So he didn't have to. We'll see. I mean, things turn on a dime, and in 2 weeks, I could tell you the relationship is 10 times worse than it was under Przycki. So,
well, with that in mind, are there some issues that you are particularly concerned about or feel need to be prioritized as council moves into the end of 2025 and into 2026?
Yeah, I think that we've had gotten a better handle on the parking situation. I still think we could do more in terms of a lot of the complaints about parking or the lack thereof in neighborhoods occurs on evenings and weekends when parking enforcement officers are not working. So that's still an ongoing conversation, but I think we've done away with a lot of the nuisance tickets that might have deterred people from coming into the city. Another passion project of mine right now is focused on litter in parks. I brought in a third party and partnering with some civic associations to help them pay to clean out, to pay a third party to help clean out the parks to supplement Parks and Rec. I was glad to successfully advocate for overtime funding for parks to work on the weekends, because that's when the parks can generally get the messiest, people hanging out there on a Friday or Saturday night. And that should subside with the colder weather, but it'll be, come the spring, it'll pick back up again. And I think another, so those are two issues. Another big part of this job is playing defense. So what I would view as problematic legislation, we've got legislation right now that, not by design, but through, it would incentivize humans to essentially, they wouldn't have to pay their water bill. It would, I have no, I don't want the city to ever shut off somebody's water for non-payment. But the problem is, if you formalize that into law and you take away the biggest, the biggest carrot and stick that the city has in getting somebody to pay their water bill, we could, that could really turn an already questionably financially stable water utility into a Flint, Michigan overnight. Not overnight, but within time. So, and again, the stats on the water shutoffs, a lot of it is vacant houses, commercial accounts that people just aren't paying anymore. So, so again, playing defense with that, I think with the rent control legislation that I think would have really accelerated our housing crisis in terms of really disincentivizing builders to build in the city. So, one, you'd exacerbate the housing supply crisis by not building, but two, a big part of the city's revenue is based on the city wage tax, which is 1.25% of somebody's salary if they live in the city or work in the city. And there's no job growth in the city, and there's very little population growth. So the more people we can get to move into the city, keep in mind in the 70s, the population of Wilmington was over 100,000. Now we're about 70,000. So we don't have to raise property tax if we have people moving into the city, so we can fund, the police, the fire department, the parks department, which handles a lot of social services in the city. So, maintaining us on some good fiscal ground is also important.
I was going to say, underpinning all this is the budget, and there's a lot of worry at various levels about budgets in the upcoming years. How do you feel about Wilmington's budget status right now, and are you concerned about maybe not necessarily this upcoming year, but maybe the year after that?
Yeah, so I think the biggest, on the federal level, there's a lot of federal money that comes through the city for housing projects that flows through the Department of Real Estate. So that could be impacted. That wouldn't, a lot of that is flow through though and goes to nonprofits to do the building. So obviously that's not good though, but it wouldn't result in, a firing 30 employees is my point. So not good, but I think the state has the bigger issue in terms of the Medicaid, Medicare funding. So yeah, I mean the federal, coming back to why I switched, Tom, I think we're kind of tying the loop here. The uncertainty on the federal picture is there's, I don't care what type of organization you're running, it's hard to have a crystal clear outlook. But I'm still bullish on, I'm always bullish on American companies and small businesses to persevere and overcome. So, we'll keep fighting.
Thanks to Wilmington City Councilman James Spadola for his time this week. Up next, we meet Delaware's 2026 Teacher of the Year, a reading specialist from the Brandywine School District. You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media.